From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in October of 2014 when several dozen homeless people in the city of Rochester moved their tent encampment to an area near South Avenue, close to 490 and the Frederick Douglass Susan B. Anthony Memorial Bridge. Many of those homeless men and women had been spending nights in the Civic Center garage, which closed its doors to the homeless that August. By December, with the weather turning colder, the city of Rochester was concerned about several issues with the tent encampment. Officials cited a problem with open fires and safety, along with drug paraphernalia. Then a week before Christmas, the city received a report that one of the tents had caught fire. Work crews used heavy equipment to take apart the tents and remove the debris. And that was a moment that divided our community. Some were angry. They said it was a blow to the local homeless population. But city leaders responded they'd been offering indoor shelter and other options, and homeless adults living in the tents had to make a choice about where to spend their nights. Well, winter is coming once again. This hour, we're looking at options for the homeless population. We're going to try to clarify some myths or misunderstandings, and my guests in the studio here work in various capacities with our homeless population. We're about to learn what resources are available in studio. Let me welcome from the Open Door Mission, Mike Hennessy. Nice to see you back here, Mike.
Thanks, Evan.
Anna Valeria Eisman's here as well. Hi, Anna.
Hi.
Nice to see you. Mike Rood from the Salvation Army and the Homeless Service Network is here. Mike, nice to see you.
Thank you.
Also here is Kim Hunt-Uzelak from the Rochester Area Interfaith Hospitality Network. Nice to see you, Kim.
Thank you.
And Sister Grace Miller from the House of Mercy is here. Sister Grace, nice to see you.
Well, thank you.
There's a lot to talk about, and there are a number of efforts that have been ongoing, and we have a very timely update. Let me start with Open Door Mission. Mike Hennessy, the last time you were here, remind our listeners the project and the plans that you had been hoping to move forward with real briefly, and
sure.
Then tell us what happened.
We had found a building that we had a purchase agreement on Post Avenue in the 19th Ward, and we were excited about the building that we could begin serving an unserved population currently in the system, which is when we were looking to who we could help the most, being a privately funded independent organization that wasn't being served, we kept bumping up against this number, like 2,000 homeless kids within the Rochester City School District, and homeless defined by the McKinney-Vento Act, which says they don't have a permanent address. They may be sleeping in a car with their mom, they may be couch surfing with grandma, but they're in crisis. And we thought that if we could get into a building, it was an old Methodist church built in 1920 and refurbished in 54 in the 19th Ward, and provide up to 20 units of family living units for 9-month stays and 12-month stays for these moms and kids to get them back into school, because 42% of these kids, K-3, are chronically absent from school. These are the kids you see Superintendent Vargas knocking on doors looking to find. And we thought if we could get some of these moms into this stabilized situation, get them the life skills they need, some parenting classes, get the kids back in school, that we could have a great impact on those families. But after two rounds with the City Planning Commission, our special use permit was denied.
When did that happen?
Monday night.
Monday
second
night.
Second time.
How you feel about that?
I'm disappointed, Evan. You read in the papers, and that all you hear about is how, you know, the anti-poverty task force, and you hear from the mayor and the county executive and the superintendent that the community has to come together to help with the poverty and chronic absenteeism and homelessness in the city. And we attempted to do that, and we were turned down. So I don't understand it.
Did they explain it to you?
It was the main reason was density. They thought that there was too many people going into this church. The church had a fire code of about 400, and we wanted to house up to 50 people, and it was considered too dense.
Do you buy that explanation, or do you think there was pressure from the neighborhood?
There was definite resistance from the neighborhood. But, you know, we had a lot of professionals look at our application, and everyone who looked at our application, based on the code and regulation and permitted uses within an R1, this was a Grand Slam home run for a special use permit. So we don't understand why we didn't prevail.
And, you know, Mike, I don't live in that neighborhood, so it's easy for me as an outsider to judge and say, well, what's the problem? But are you concerned that there's a little bit of a NIMBY approach to rehabilitational services, helping the homeless, affordable housing, et cetera? Is there a concern that people like to say the right things, but when it comes down to saying thumbs up, I can be there, it can be in my neighborhood, we can work with it. Are you concerned that people say no?
I think that NIMBY is always an issue with folks that are trying to help the homeless. And I think that it was brought up several times that, you know, that we really appreciate the program, we think it's great, we think Open Door Mission is great, we think you're great, but not here. And so that's, in essence, what NIMBY is.
What do you do next with this? Is this over, or you keep trying?
Oh, no, sir. When we're helping some women and children in this community, then we'll rest.
But with this specific site, this building, is this sort of a done deal? It's not going to happen now?
Oh, yeah. We were voted down twice on this building. This is water under the bridge. We are moving forward. We're looking for a new site.
Okay. Sister Grace from the House of Mercy, you know, we go back to last winter and the concerns about finding some permanent housing, and I know you have been not only concerned about the homeless population that House of Mercy works with, but also looking for more permanent solutions.
Right.
What's the status on your end?
Well, we're very concerned about the people who are put out of Sanctuary Village. We have the House of Mercy where we take care of homeless, but when Sanctuary Village closed April 15th, we were very concerned about the homeless, where they were going. Many were scattered throughout the city and the county, and some we could find, some we couldn't find. They were calling us for tents and for food. So we have been looking, really from the very beginning, about a year and a half ago, we were looking for a permanent building for the homeless, and we looked at about 40 buildings, and we weren't having much luck. But then one of our homeless found a place on Ormond Street, and I'm happy to say today that we had a generous donor who paid for the building. And we closed on it, and the building is ours, and we will be able to take in the homeless, and we're very happy about that and very grateful to the donor. But the building has to be renovated. So that puts us back where we were last year. What's going to happen to the homeless that are out there now, with winter coming? So we called on the churches and the community, because we feel this is really a community problem. You know, like you said, it's a community problem. And we feel very strongly that the community needs to be involved, as well as the authorities. So we started the REACH organization, which is the Rochester Emergency Action Committee for the Homeless. And that consists of churches and organizations. And at the first meeting we held, and that was called by Doopsie, Downtown United Presbyterian Church, over 100 people responded. So that there are people from the community, organizations, churches, and students from the colleges. And so then the second meeting we had, we broke into committees, and we have a building committee, communications committee, finance committee, operations committee. Now, the first thing we have to do is to find a building soon for this population that is still out there. And that's where we are right now.
And if you get that for this winter, that will be the bridge that will take you through, and then the other permanent building that you have will be ready starting next
exactly,
year?
Exactly. And we can't wait for that. It really hurts us when, you know, the homeless are constantly being put out. You know, when they were put out at Sanctuary Village, that was very difficult. It was very hard. And we know that the homeless, you know, they try to find refuge many places. And if they go into buildings or, you know, if they go into buildings or outside of buildings and they try to find a warm spot, you know, we know they're put out. They're put out. So my happiness will be when we have a permanent building and no one will be able to say, you can't come in. You have to leave.
Let me follow that, Sister Grace, with a question that, you know, I don't have a representative from the city of Rochester here. They have told us that, you know, I think they took some heat for what happened on December 20th last year with the tent encampment. Mm-hmm. And they said, we don't want to be insensitive to our homeless population. We care about them. But we are going to try to make sure they have other options, and they've got to choose it. They've got to embrace that. Do you agree with that?
Well, you know, I think what they're saying is that all the homeless can be taken care of. They can go into other shelters, they can go to hotels, and the county will take care of them. And they do take care of many of them. But there is a segment, the chronic homeless, that will not fit into those categories that they're talking about.
As in they won't accept that help?
Well, you know, there are some that won't accept it, but what we believe is that if we work with the people, give them time, and really care for them and show them we care about them and help them to get into apartments or deal with the mental issues they have, and many of them have mental issues, that if we work with them slowly at their pace, most of them will eventually go into housing first or an apartment. Granted, there will be some, very few, who, you know, they've been homeless for so many years and they have these mental issues that it's going to be harder to place them. You know, but we believe that we need this shelter that where we can work with the people, with the homeless, until they're ready to move on.
I see the phone starting to ring. We're going to get to your phone calls. And I also want to make clear, when I phrase the question as I just did to Sister Grace Miller, some in our audience might think, well, the host does not get it. People who are chronically homeless may have mental illness and addiction and other issues, and it's easy for someone like me to say, well, they're not taking the help that's offered. Just go, right? You know, I'm not in their shoes, so I'm not trying to judge. I'm just asking a question, and I think what Sister Grace is illustrating for us is that, you know, there is going to be a population, as you say, you think it's rather small, of people who are going to be chronically homeless and are going to need more and more time. Are you concerned that eventually, you know, can you reach them? Do you think that if you kind of pull them, if you extend that hand, even if it takes longer, can you get them clean, get them help that they need?
Yes, we've had that at the House of Mercy. We're always taking in the homeless, and we work with them to get them on their feet. You know, first of all, getting them some income or helping them to get a job. But then after the income, then they have to find a place to live. And so we're looking for apartments for them. And then when they go into apartments, they need everything you need for an apartment, you know, furniture and things like that. So we're doing that all the time. We also recognize that there are people with serious mental issues that we still have at the House of Mercy. Because, you know, when we send them to hospitals for help or agencies for help, they're sent right back to us. And so we think more needs to be done with the mental health department in Rochester because there are so many that are mentally ill. And we'll take them and we'll hold on to them until someone will come along and help them.
Before I bring in Mike Rood and Kim Hunt-Uzelak, let me just ask Mike and Sister Grace the same question here. And I'll start with you, Sister Grace. You mentioned mental health services. We know that's a component of homelessness, not in all cases, but certainly in some and in many cases with the chronically homeless. What is an example of something that could be done to improve our mental health services in this community? Because what we hear is sort of a platitude often, whether it's political leaders or others, and it's kind of a broad-based comment, we need better mental health. But I don't always know what that means. What does that mean to you?
Well, you know, I think that for us, we're considering in our new building having someone from the mental health department be actually placed in the house with us, in the shelter, because then they're closer to the issue, they're closer to the problem. But I think to have someone present there would be very helpful. And we do have Dr. Bell is one of our doctors who works very closely with us. And he comes to the House of Mercy, and he will deal with our people who have mental issues. And he enjoys coming. But I think to have maybe someone who deals with the mentally ill and really knows how to do it, how to handle it, be present at the shelter, I think that would help very much.
Okay. Mike Hennessy, same question. What can we do specifically for mental health?
I think what I hear from the mental health community is that these folks do better in the community. The problem with that statement is there's no place for them to go. The group homes where they have supporting housing services have waiting lists that circle blocks and blocks and blocks. So as the psychiatric beds diminish, the need continues to rise. We know with vets and PTSD, we have a lot of issues that are rising. So that they do better in the community only works to the degree that they have availability for them to be received. We find that when 30% of the open door mission beds are inhabited by folks with some degree of mental illness every day, every year of the year, we find that even with the mentally ill, when we provide them healthy shelter and we provide showers and we provide clean beds and we provide hot meals and we provide volunteers to come in and love on them and bless them, and everyone makes a decision to be somewhere. And a lot of times with the mentally ill, it's who are they hanging with, who are they following, and a lot in the homeless community, even in the chronic community, they do form bonds and relationships and groups that sustain each other. But we have found that with a mentally ill person who is given opportunity to rekindle hope, and sometimes it's a shower or a clean bed or somebody to love them, once hope is rekindled, then they can start making better decisions, even within the parameters of their mental illness. So We think there are choices that are still made. We think, who are you following? And if you can follow somebody that will help you get to a better place in your in a more stable living environment, then they can make those decisions better too. If it's who's influencing you a lot of times, and we think everybody can make a choice to make a take a better step.
Okay, let me just close the loop with Sister Grace then on the structure that you're hoping for this winter. Do you have options in sight that you think you're going to find a place for the winter?
Yes, we do have options. We're working on them now, and we're hoping that soon we'll be able to announce the fact that we have a place, a temporary building for the homeless this winter.
To get through the winter.
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. If you want to call the program, we're talking homelessness this hour and the various organizations that are reaching out and helping our homeless population. It's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. Or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Kim Hunt Uzalak is with the Rochester Area Interfaith Hospitality Network. And one of the important distinctions here is, what do we mean when we talk about a homeless population? From various numbers I've seen, roughly 8,000 people in our region classified as homeless, but I don't know how you would go about that. What would you want our listeners to know when we talk about the homeless population, so to speak, Kim?
Thanks, Evan. So I'm from RAIN, which stands for Rochester Area Interfaith Hospitality Network, and we serve families. Mm-hmm. We serve about 30 families a year, so we are a small organization, but we provide very comprehensive services for all our families. So first of all, let me just say I'm floored that the city turned down the plan by the Open Door Mission to serve additional women and their families, their children, because we turn away about five families a day. Five families a day.
At RAIN?
Yes, at RAIN. So the need is definitely there, and I think growing. So with our families, we are able to accept men and women. So we are one of the few shelters that can take in the whole family mm-hmm. together. So women with their children, women and men together with their children, grandparents with their children. And I believe the need is growing.
And what's the definition of homeless to you?
Well, we often, even before I got into this line of work, when I heard the word homeless, I would think of the person on the corner, you know, chronic homelessness, someone that may be mentally ill or has an addiction. That's not what we're seeing at RAIN. We're seeing actually about 60% of our families are working. So we definitely are serving the working poor. It can happen to anybody. You know, it might be a family that has always been working and had a child go into the emergency room for a health issue, and they had lost their job because they had to be with their child and they didn't pay their rent and became evicted. That's an example of a family we've served.
And Kim, don't you think there's a stereotype that says if you're homeless, there's no way you're working?
Definitely. I think that's the number one statistic. When I explain our organization and who we serve, that's the number one statistic that surprises the community the most, is that 60% of our families are working.
And Mike Rood from Salvation Army and the Homeless Service Network, before the hour even began, I think you were mentioning that the 2,000-plus children who are, I think, technically, definitionally homeless in the city of Rochester, the people, for example, that Open Door Mission is trying to reach out to and help, often kids with one parent or a grandparent moving house to house week to week, they're not technically classified in the numbers of homeless. Is that correct?
That is correct. The homeless are usually people who are either unsheltered, if we get a point-in-time survey of who they are, or people who are in shelter currently, and those are the numbers that we usually look at. We can't go around to folks and count their who's sleeping in their couch tonight and those kinds of things, but that's where a lot of our folks are sleeping, is from couch to couch and, you know, from place to place, staying with whoever they can. I had a young lady call me yesterday who was being evicted, and she said, well, I'm good for 2 weeks with my cousin. So she won't be counted as homeless until she enters her shelter in a couple weeks. And we'll offer her shelter, our Hope House Women's Shelter, in 2 weeks if she needs that still. But we also talk a lot about the chronically homeless, which we've talked about today, which are a very important part that Sister Grace is very involved in working with. We do meet as the Homeless Services Network on a monthly basis, and we did actually speak yesterday as a group about how we're going to be approaching this winter and working with Sister Grace and all of those who are interested and helping to be sure people are not sleeping in our streets. And so all the shelters like the Salvation Army, Catholic Family Center, Open Door Mission will open extra beds. We'll try to squeeze as many people as we can in. We do outreach efforts as a community monthly and usually bi-monthly in the winter. And it's a lot of churches and community agencies that go out and find people where they are at. And you asked about mental health earlier. Meeting people where they're at is the key. We want to go to people. We want to go to people in their tents. We want to go to people where they're staying. And we have mental health counselors that come into our shelters and meet people in the shelters where they're at and talk to them about their illnesses and the things that they want to address. So we try to make as many services available to people as possible right where they're at and try to welcome people to do better and improve their lives if they are able to do that. One real key issue is last year, I think, if you look at some numbers, we had about, and these are rough numbers, about 140 families or 140 individuals that we did outreach to in the community through the street outreach, and about 70 of those people are now in permanent housing. Mm-hmm. And that's through the efforts of all of these folks who meet together in a chronic homeless work group. We meet together monthly to discuss the cases, to talk about the folks, to try to meet the needs of the folks with where they're at, and then try to get them rapidly rehoused and into permanent housing. Our goal in the community, our goal in the nation, is to get people in permanent housing. And so we are trying to do that as quickly as we can when people are able to do that.
Before I get to your phone calls, Mike, let me just follow up that question. I imagine when someone is homeless and then ends up with help and permanent housing, that there is some level of relapse, some people who struggle to maintain, et cetera. And there's no single answer to this, but in general, are there services, are you kind of mindful to make sure, hey, if there's 70 people, for example, in permanent housing, we know that a certain number historically tells us they're going to fall out of this, they'll lose work, in other ways. What do you do to kind of follow up with that?
So one of the best programs we have in Rochester, I believe, is Shelter Plus. And Shelter Plus is a program connected to Rochester Housing Authority. If you're homeless and have a disability, particularly chronically homeless, you can be housed, and Section 8 can pay all of your rent if need be. If you are working, one of my clients I used to work with called it his homelessness insurance. He would get a job, and he would work part-time, and then he'd pay 30% of his income to his rent. And then if he lost his job, which he did, he was able to get his rent paid 100% by Rochester Housing until he got his next job. He's now retired and has Social Security and pays 30% of his income towards rent. So that sort of support has allowed that person not to become homeless again. So people are chronically homeless. They're episodically homeless. They have episodes, as you're referring to. And then certainly we have people who have situational homelessness, like a fire or those kinds of situations that they never thought they'd be homeless, and that happens. But the largest group are people who have those episodes that do struggle with keeping it together, and it's usually the working poor. And it can be folks that have relapses with addiction, folks that have mental illness that maybe stop taking their meds and those kinds of things. But the plus part of Shelter Plus is that you have a case manager. And so if you start struggling and the case manager does a home visit or you go to your case manager, we can intervene and we can try to catch the episode before it happens and keep you housed. Because our goal is to keep people housed whenever possible.
My last question before I turn it over to our listeners on the phones, it takes me back to Tuesday of this week. Different conversation, but there was a similar tone. We talked to Kevin Hines about suicide prevention, and he said we have got to stop thinking of mental illness differently than we would do with physical illness. He said, for example, if you have a heart problem and you take medicine every day, you take medicine every day, and people never say, whoa, you know, that person's got a heart problem, or that person with a heart problem will almost never say, hey, it's weak to have a heart problem. I've been doing this for 3 years. I'm just going to stop taking medication. If you need it, you need it. You take it. Whereas in mental illness, story after story. I mean, I would think that many of us know someone who has said, I'm going to go off meds. I'm going to, maybe didn't even tell anybody. They think it's weak, or we stigmatize. Everybody in this room kind of agree with that, that we heard from Kevin Hines earlier this week. Yes. We've got to stop assuming mental illness is different and just stigmatizing it. You're nodding, Mike, yeah?
Definitely, definitely. There's a lot of stigma around it. And the other thing that we'll often see with folks is that the medicine makes them feel better. So sometimes they feel better and they say, well, I don't need this anymore, so let's stop taking the medicine.
Right, right.
Or the side effects of the medicine that people don't like, and so they stop taking the medicine for different reasons. But there's a huge stigma around mental illness, and we do need to treat it just like diabetes, heart disease, anything else. It's just another type of illness, and we need to encourage people to take care of themselves.
Sister Grace?
Well, you know, I think that there's much more we can do. I think we need to alert the people that are in charge of mental health to really make an effort to work with the mentally ill. I don't see that happening, and that's what bothers me. And it bothers me when I'm at the House of Mercy and I see so many mentally ill there, and I'm thinking, we're not really equipped to handle the mentally ill, but we do. We do take care of them. We make sure they're taking their medication, but very often they are not taking the medication they're supposed to be taking. And so they remain in the same situation they are, that they're already in. I just think that there needs to be, the community really needs to step up and take care of our people who are mentally ill. And when they go to hospitals, put them out so quickly, which is what they do. They'll say, well, we can't do anything more for them, or, that we've done as much as we can. I can't buy that. I just think that this is a community problem that needs to be addressed. And I think that the proper personnel needs to be there to do it. We'll take care of them in our shelter. We're not going to put any of them out. But I'm very concerned about them when they remain in the same situation they're in. What do we do? And that isn't just a problem for the House of Mercy. It's a problem for the community and the hospitals and people that are working in mental health.
And that's why you want a mental health professional on site.
Yes, I do.
And you
yes.
think with your permanent new home, new facility, that you'll have that eventually?
Oh, we're going to work towards that, yeah. Yes. We'd like to have a person, working with a mental ill. We'd like to have hospice. We'd like to have a medical room, because right now we have you of our medical students coming in regularly to work with our people, and they love it, and they are a help to us. They've caught people who were suddenly ill and weren't taking their medication, and they've taken care of them, and they've called the ambulance, and so we're very comfortable when they come because they are helping us. One of the things that I find is that the homeless need community. And we found that at Sanctuary Village, we find that at the House of Mercy. And we do, when we do put them into housing and apartments, I have one major concern. We've had people who have died when they were in an apartment because there was no one there to get them on time if they've gotten ill or if they had some kind of an attack. And in the shelters, if someone is ill, one of the other homeless will spot it. And they'll notify, the people that are in charge, and we get them to the hospitals, and we've saved lives that way. So, we do need housing, for the homeless, but I do have a major concern about people who, if they're in apartments, will die. We've had that happen, where people that moved into apartments have died there because no one was there to help them.
All right, I'm late for a break. Let's get a short break in and come back with our guests and your phone calls. If you're waiting on the line, Paul, Tracy, we're coming to you. We've got Sister Grace Miller, who you just heard speaking from the House of Mercy. Mike Hennessy, the Executive Director of Open Door Mission, is here with Anna Valeria Eisman as well. From Open Door, Mike Rood from Salvation Army and the Homeless Service Network, and Kim Hunt Uzalak from the Rochester Area Interfaith Hospitality Network. Your phone calls next on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, the ACLU's Dennis Parker is in Rochester today, and he's coming into Connections to talk about race and policing in the era of video. Video cameras are ubiquitous these days. It seems like everyone's got cell phone video. It's very unlikely that if you're in public, that your actions are not being recorded in some way. So what can we learn from what we've seen? We'll talk to Dennis Parker next hour.
Is experience as a corporate CEO enough preparation for being president of the United States?
Presidents have power. They've got lots of power. But the idea that makes them akin to a CEO misses just how hard this job really is.
The Corner Office versus the Oval Office, later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4 on WXXI.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. On the phones waiting has been Paul in Rochester. First up, go ahead, Paul.
Yes, good afternoon. Just three quick things. One, I believe it was in the 60s, the late 60s, where the state and the city ran out of money and ran out of room, and they started, I don't know if it was national or what, but deinstitutionalized on the patients. I believe there was some type of guidelines and tests created that if the individual with no harm to another person, they could put them out on the street and hopefully they would find a way to a homeless shelter or a soup kitchen, which it's still, that's that started putting them out there by the hundreds. And secondly, as I went by South Avenue, underneath the bridge, it looks as though they put a fence up around that area. But right next to it, in the woods, there's a new camp already sprouting up. And two or three, at the Open Door Mission, right literally behind that building, there is a housing development going up, and it looks like it's something to do with the state or the county for special housing units. Does one of your panel know what this housing is, and why couldn't something like this be done for the homeless?
Paul, thanks for the call. I don't know offhand.
I don't know what the only building I can think of that's new for that's housing is DePaul at the Carriage House. I don't know what he might be talking about.
Okay.
And we are aware of the tents that are going up around. The city did put the state transportation department put the fence around the area where homeless were sleeping last year. And we, as recently as last week, were out doing outreach to those folks, and there are a number of tents there, and we're continuing to try to reach those folks and bring them into shelter.
Well, that tent was put up immediately after Sanctuary Village closed, and it bothered us that was put up because the message was, you know, you can't pitch any tents here. And so what we found is that the homeless were seeking other areas where they could pitch tents, and many of them were hiding because they didn't want the city to see where they were. They didn't want the police coming along and arresting them, so they were hiding. And they were hiding because they knew the tents were not supposed to be seen visible in the city. And it did bother us. But we were called. People called us and said they were out in the cold. Would we give them tents? And we would give them tents. As long as they need the tents, we'll give them to them. And that's why we're working hard to get a permanent place for them, so they won't need to be in tents outside. But that did bother us when that happened. And it was a definite message to the homeless, you're not to park your tents here.
Keith in Rochester, next up. Go ahead, Keith.
Good afternoon. Listening to the program, I realize you have individuals from several different organizations. I work for the federal government, and right now we're in the midst of a combined federal campaign, which is similar to the United Way fundraising events. So I was wondering, is there a local organization, say, for people who want to provide financial support? Is there a local organization, umbrella organization that represents all of the different groups there today? Or, say, if we wanted to provide some type of financial support, would we have to reach out to each individual organization to do so?
I don't know offhand. Mike?
Yeah, so, Mike.
The United Way would be the umbrella organization that we use, but I'm not sure that they particularly directly fund everybody here. However, you can do directed funding through the United Way if you want to give to RAIN or House of Mercy. You can ask the United Way to direct your funds that way, or to Open Door Mission, because I don't think you receive United Way funds either.
No.
So that would be the umbrella organization to work under.
I think the answer in general, though, is no, and I think there's a reason for that. And we've got multiple organizations represented here today. House of Mercy, Open Door Mission, Mike Rood from Salvation Army and the Homeless Service Network, Kim is from the Rochester Area Interfaith Hospitality Network, and they have the same goal. They want to help our homeless population. But, you know, it's not a secret that people like Sister Grace and Mike Hennessy may disagree about certain things. I love having them together because I appreciate both of their passion, and I actually think they really appreciate each other, even though there
That's
are times
right.
they probably
Absolutely.
Lock horns.
Right.
No, they really do. But I don't think, Keith, I think very gently but understandably so, the answer is no, because there is a bit of a different approach at times. House of Mercy does not have the same approach on all issues as Open Door Mission. And so some secular organizations may have a different approach to faith-based. So it's a really good question, and unfortunately the answer is no, and it probably just means you've got to spend a little bit more time kind of digging into what each group is doing. Is that
wow,
fair?
Wow, great answer, Evan.
Is that fair?
You know,
fair.
Whenever I'm asked this, I think in Palmyra, when you go down 31 to Palmyra, you see four churches on the four corners between
That's right.
Main and North Street.
That's right.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, can't you guys just all get together and
make
and,
one
and,
church?
And make one church, right? And it's
we're all going to the same
it's
place.
It's an easier
right?
question than it is an answer.
Mm-hmm. But, Keith, I do appreciate the sentiment of wanting to help, and I know these organizations do as well. Tracy in Brockport has been waiting. Go ahead, Tracy.
Hi, Evan. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I know that a lot of the homeless population identifies as lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender. And I'm wondering if your guests can talk about any of the special services that they offer those populations, especially transgender people. I know that can be a challenge for the religiously affiliated groups. So I'm wondering if a transgender woman shows up to one of these shelters, is she going to be able to be housed with other women, for example? And are there any other services that you can offer to the LGBT folks in this area who are homeless and who need help?
Thank you, Tracy. I don't know the answer to that. Let me start with Sister Grace. Go ahead, Sister Grace.
Well, as far as the House of Mercy is concerned, everyone is welcome. Anyone, and we never question, you know, their sexual orientation. And we have many people that fall in that category. Do we have the services to provide them right now? No. Would we like to have a place where we could, offer them assistance? Yes. Right now, we just take them as they are, accept them as they are, and that's it.
Okay. Rain, Kim?
Yep, the same. I echo what Sister Grace says. We accept all. It's not even something we ask. If they're a family, we let the family define the family. So if it's a woman and a woman, a man and a man, transgender, that's fine. In terms of follow-up services, we treat them like any other family. Comprehensive services while they're in the shelter program. We have an aftercare for 1 year. We follow our families to ensure stability afterwards, so we would provide the same services regardless.
Okay. Mike Hennessy, Open Door Mission?
Yeah, we believe that Jesus would serve them all, so you look to serve folks as they are, as Mike said. Where are you at? How can we help you? We currently don't have a woman's facility, but we do. We currently have a men's facility. So, it's a matter of what's the best interest of the guest. Before I would put you with 40 other men in a bunkhouse, but there's our goal is to serve everyone in the best way possible, from to meet their needs from their perspective, and if that includes referrals and everything else, we'll work with them until we find that solution.
Mike Rube.
So it's an interesting question for the Salvation Army. Nationally, they've taken some heat over this issue. I've been with the Salvation Army for over 20 years, and I've always been very welcoming. All of our sites are welcoming. We have men's facilities, women's facilities, and youth facilities, housing over 90 people every night. So it's important to us that if someone identifies a woman, that she be placed at Hope House, if that's what her preference is. And if a person concerned identifies as a man, we will place them into Booth Haven, our men's facility. And we actually designed our two current facilities with private rooms as well. So if people need private rooms, that we will accommodate them if that's something people are more comfortable with because of identity issues or because of health issues. There's different reasons why we have private rooms. And then also in our women's program, we put in a private bathroom for folks in case they needed a private space for that. So we were very mindful of those things and accommodating all, welcoming all. And very important. I think all of our sites do the best we can to hook people up to the best health care possible, the best mental health care possible. It's limited, as Sister Grace has noted, certainly at times, but we want to be sure people are getting what they need.
Tracy, thanks for the call. Hope that answers your question. We've had a number of listeners who have ideas for spaces or ways, things that they see. let's hit a couple of them. This is Tom in Rochester, wants to weigh in. Go ahead, Tom.
I thought there were some schools that were closed, and then I thought there was like factories, and then Old Tent City, they had the main building, and then they had a sports center across the way. So I just wondered and some churches, vacant churches around.
Go ahead.
I called the diocese personally and to look for rectories and churches that were being, repurposed, and they told me that they didn't have any other city properties that were available. I did look at the former Tent City. It's 100,000 square feet, and they want $1 million. And if you've driven by, I'm not an architectural engineer, but I don't think so. But it just wasn't affordable and too much work. We did like for a shelter. We did look at the building, the sports complex across the street. But for our case, the mission has been on 524 Main Street since 1954. So what we believe is that our shelter, and when we do, we'd like to find a new facility for our shelter. We'd like to expand it. We'd like to have some rooms for a chapel and a dining hall and a bunkhouse that aren't all the same room, and expand some services. But we believe that shelter needs to be within about a half a mile of where it currently is, or else it disrupts the population that's mm-hmm. using it now. Mm-hmm. It it disrupts the flow and the patterns of normalcy that have been developed. So that's been tougher. That building is almost 2 miles away. That's a 30-minute walk, and you know, how do you know whether they'd come? And especially in 30, when it's minus 30, am I going to walk half an hour to get to my shelter? Tough walk. So as far as other fact, you know, we've looked at dozens of buildings, and you know, a lot of buildings mm-hmm. are just dilapidated and beyond repair and just mm-hmm. Economically unfeasible to refurbish. But thanks for the idea.
Yeah.
Well, Sister Grace? We didn't know that you contacted the diocese, because we did too. And we wrote several letters to the bishop. His response was that the Catholic Charities does a good job in taking care of the homeless. You know, and they do.
And they do.
But there are some chronic homeless out there that we are still concerned about, and you know, they're the ones we are still hoping the diocese will help. And we did have a meeting with them, and hopefully there'll be another one. But because we got that response, that's when we appealed to the churches and to the organizations that now have this reach group. I think when we were looking for buildings, we looked at over 40 buildings, and some, you know, pulled away from us. Some just were not feasible. But we were hoping, and we just couldn't understand why someone who had a building downtown, an empty building downtown, wouldn't offer that building for the homeless. Because we did so much searching and spent so much time on this. We also wondered why the churches who had, if they were empty buildings, why they didn't offer their buildings or space in their buildings. The first church that came through was Doopsie, Downtown United Presbyterian Church, who took our homeless in for 2 weeks, which was wonderful, because then as soon as they left Doopsie, they were able to go into Sanctuary Village, and they were saved this winter, you know, the horrible weather that we had. You know, my big question was, with all the buildings downtown, and that's where the homeless are, and that's where we need to work, you know, to keep them, to help them, why didn't the offers come through? You know, I have a building, I'll give it to you, because we really don't have the money. We have to raise the money to shelter the homeless. So we need people in the community to offer their buildings, to come through with money, to help us to take care of this population that's really in great need of help.
On Twitter, Martina says, can we get some space in the Irondequoit Mall? we know that's been a years-long headache, but I don't think I've ever heard a site for the homeless. For anybody in this room, has that ever come up? Irondequoit Mall is a destination now?
In Irondequoit in general?
No?
I don't know. I think that would be...
No. Yeah. Plus, the homeless are downtown.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And walking to Irondequoit, we've had a place on Hudson on Clifford Avenue. It still is too far for people to walk. So we're looking for a place downtown, which is much easier for the homeless.
I got a note on an event coming up that I want to mention here, a music benefit for the Open Door Mission, if we could. That's coming up. And I think it's through, and Mike Hennessy from Open Door, correct me if I'm wrong, it's through the Monroe County Public Defender's Office Appeals and Parole Department.
Yep.
They've got staff volunteers a couple times a month at the Open Door Mission serving hot breakfast.
Yep, it's awesome.
And heard from Jennifer over there, who is a regular listener of this program.
She's also awesome.
Yeah, that's, she seems it.
Yeah.
She loves this program. She's got that going for her. And she wanted our listeners to know about it. It's coming up on Wednesday, November 4th. So that's two Wednesdays from now. And it's 6 p.m. The doors open at 6 p.m. Music starts at 7. It's at... is it at Abilene?
Abilene.
It's at Abilene. That's on Liberty Pole Way, one of the great places in the city. So doors open at 6, music starts at 7, Wednesday, November 4th at Abilene, $5 admission. They're going to have music, raffles, prizes, giveaways. And you can donate, by the way, hygiene products, new and gently used coats, hats, gloves, scarves, blankets. Think winter, think needs, hygiene products, new and gently used coats, hats, gloves, scarves, blankets. As part of that event on Wednesday, November 4th. So that should be fun.
Code Blues,
yeah. And I assume that you could stop by the Open Door Mission and drop those off.
I suspect
everyone in this group would say, if you've got... Well, that opens the door.
We could use them, too.
That opens the door. What do you need? Kim, what do you need most at RAIN that the public could help with?
Well... our families are at a day center during the day, and then we utilize 41 congregations for space in the evenings for shelter. So I would say at the day center, we need anything that you need to run a day, a a house. So laundry detergent is a huge one because we have laundry facilities. Anything that you need to bathe. We provide families with cleaning supplies when they leave. We put together a little cleaning bucket with so anything that you would need to set up a household. We always make sure our families leave with cleaning supplies, basic kitchen supplies, and mattresses. So any of those things welcome.
They could deliver them to where?
They can call us at RAIN. You can go to our website, find our number, and call us. And
RAIN, by the way, is RAIHN, Rochester Area Interfaith Hospitality Network. Sister Grace, besides money and a building.
Oh, we need heavy winter jackets. And I would say sizes X to 5X. We get donations, but not those sizes. And that's what we need. We need gloves. We need scarves. We need boots, large size boots. We need blankets and sheets. And we need socks galore. I mean, they go through socks, you know, quickly. For the winter, we need any winter clothes, large sizes, and we need them for men and women, and particularly at our shelter, men. And we also can use some children's, winter apparel too. But definitely heavy, heavy winter jackets. Our people are coming in with thin jackets or no jackets or torn jackets. So we want them to be kept well warm this winter. So that's really a need that we have.
All right. Where can our listeners find you to do that then?
A House of Mercy.
Which is?
725 Hudson Avenue.
Simple as that. Okay.
Simple as that. And remember, too, that we are also working with the REACH organization so that we're going to have to share what we get with them. So we need plenty of winter supplies.
So you need everything, but you really need large size, large and over-large.
Right,
large size,
right, really large. Right, yeah. Right.
Okay. Mike Rood?
Yeah, would echo everybody pretty much. I mean, one of the new socks and new underwear are always appreciated by our folks when they come in, and the heavy winter jackets are always appreciated, along with some heavy quilts for our shelters during the winter. Those are things that we would appreciate, and you could drop those off at our main Salvation Army building at 70 Liberty Pole, right downtown. That's where two of our men's sites are, where we have about 60 beds.
Okay, and Anna and Mike, anything we missed that you need over at Open Door? Yeah,
just double it and bring it down to 156 North Plymouth Avenue.
Before we lose the hour here, we had a couple of listeners just ask about trends. Are you seeing more or fewer people who are homeless, who need help? And I'll just start with Mike Hennessy at Open Door Mission. More or fewer?
Yeah, you read in the paper that the economy's proven, but it's not hitting our streets. It's we're seeing more and more people in crisis. I'm seeing more and more families, women and children, at our community meals program and coming in for clothing, especially towards it used to be the end of the month. Now it's mid month, when the SNAP benefits are running out. So whatever you're reading in the paper is not hitting our folks, and we're gonna just pray for a mild winter is what I would do, because it's gonna be a busy year.
Okay. Kim, more or fewer?
More. I would say more. With greater needs. We had, I tracked how many families we had coming from cars last year. We had 7. So about 1 a month I'm getting now from cars. So I would say greater numbers and greater needs.
Okay. Sister Grace, what do you
say? I definitely see more. We definitely see more. We have over 4,000 people a month that come to the House of Mercy for help. That number has not dwindled at all. In fact, it increases. And many of them are homeless and people really deeply in need.
Okay, Mike Rood.
Well, I think the important thing is that we think about those that we are not counting in these counts, as we talked about earlier, those sleeping on couches, doubled up with families. They don't know if tomorrow they're going to have a place to sleep. And so those numbers are definitely high. And they affect all of us, because eventually they hit our doors. And we, as I mentioned, have about 90 beds a night, and we're full almost every night in our sites.
I call that population one argument away from homelessness, one argument away from sleeping in the car. If they're doubling up with grandma, they're one argument away from needing shelter.
Mm-hmm. And CJ writes to the program and says, could the homeless houses use volunteers to help with rehab? The building, I mean. So he's essentially saying, first of all, in general, we got about just over a minute left. can you use volunteers to begin with? And number two, Sister Grace, do you need building rehab help?
Yes, we do. We need it for the new shelter we're opening up at Ormond Street, the permanent one. But we also, REACH now needs help with the building that we're going to get for the temporary building.
So again, you don't know where it is. If you missed it earlier, Sister Grace is hoping to have an announcement on that soon, but you don't have it yet.
It'll be soon. We don't have it yet, but we know that we will definitely need rehab help.
All right, so contact House of Mercy. The answer to that is yes. And then in terms of just general volunteering, can Rain take volunteers?
Yep. We only have 4 staff members, 1 full-time, 3 part-time, and over 1,500 volunteers, and we're always looking for more.
So, again, contact Rain, which is the Rochester Area Interfaith Hospitality Network. Open Door, volunteers?
OpenDoorMission.com/volunteer. Fill out the apps.
Okay. And Mike Rude.
And 987-9500. Call the Salvation Army. Ask for our volunteer coordinator, and she'll connect you. We always use volunteers.
You know, Mike, one of my pet peeves is when someone leaves me a long voicemail, and then they give me their phone number once. So you have to give it to me. You have to give it to me
so
again.
So it's 987-9500. And if you want the direct extension, it's 2312.
Even better. Even better. Good luck to all of these organizations. And listen, again, to Keith's point earlier, they have slightly different approaches to our community, but we all want the same things. And I have some great admiration for the work they do for our community. So let's continue the conversation as we go into the most precarious time of year. Sister Grace, thank you for being here.
Thank you for inviting
Tim,
me.
Tim, thank you. From Rain, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Mike and Anna, great to have you from Open Door. Cheers.
Thanks,
you. Evan. And Mike Rude, Salvation Army, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Short break. More Connections next.